I'm Jamie Welch, and you're listening to an excerpt from the Gettysburgian and WZBT's podcast, On Target. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or catch new episodes of On Target every weekend at gettysburgian.com/podcast. Well, it's April, and that means it's decision time for millions of college applicants around the country. For most undergraduate institutions, the deposit deadline is May 1st, so students only have a few weeks left to decide where they'd like to attend college. This is also one of the busiest seasons for college admissions offices, as they work to maximize the percentage of students who accept their offers of acceptance, also known as yield. Joining us now to talk about his life, career, and the college application process is Daryl Jones, Senior Associate Director of Admissions at Gettysburg College. Daryl, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. It's a pleasure.
So I want to get started in the beginning. So can you talk a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and what you did before you came here to work at Gettysburg?
Sure. So I grew up actually in Gettysburg and actually adjacent to Gettysburg College's campus. I went away to college, so I was a track and field athlete and a member of the Marching Blue Band at Penn State University, thinking I wanted to be a doctor. It was a little problem because surgeons see blood, and I'm not good with blood, so that took care of that one. Eventually, I decided to do something else. So after a brief stint on Wall Street, I came back home for what I thought was 2 years. And I have loved every one of the 33 years of that 2 years that I've been here.
Yeah, definitely. You're also on the board of directors of the Pennsylvania Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. And I understand you're involved in the independent music scene. So could you talk a little bit about your work on the side in the music industry?
Sure. You've actually done some homework.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, the current name is the Academy for Media Production. So it teaches film, recording, and lots of other things. I've always been a musician, and I'm actually part of a professional society called the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. So that's called ASCAP.
Right.
So when you're looking at actual labels to CDs or pieces of music, you might see ASCAP in parentheses. But I have always been a musician and have been fortunate to be with some people who allow me to do some music collaboration with them. I lead an 11-piece band called What Breaks Loose that is really fantastic. And the recording aspect is really about using musicians to record musicians and produce them without ripping them off the way some other people in the business do. So we're known for really attracting some great bands to record, but being fair to them and actually getting them to be good at what they record before actually recording, because studio time is money.
Do you have any CDs out? Do you just perform live with your band? How does that all work?
So this current band is a bunch of musicians from several different bands. Our members stretch from near Philadelphia to Baltimore, New Jersey, and some other places in Maryland. And we just have fun. What we do is we make arrangements that are difficult to copy for other people. Mm-hmm. We choose keys that are tough to emulate, and then we play. So as an example, one of the songs we do, believe it or not, is a funk version of Amazing Grace in F sharp major. Really tough to play. So yeah. We don't have CDs with that band. We are just about playing live.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So do you do that regularly, or is that sort of an impromptu kind of thing?
Not impromptu, because we have technically 11 members, and so
wrangling that's a lot of logistics there.
Yeah, multi-state band with 11 members is tough. So we do have, if I can do a plug, Jamie, May 12th and 13th, we are playing back-to-back shows, 10 p.m. at Gary Owen Irish Pub on the 12th. And on Mother's Day, we are playing at Battlefield Brew Works at about 1 p.m. So,
well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting, and maybe the band will still love me after we play these two shows.
Well, they're two great venues. You'll probably have a lot of people there to see you. So
we have a good following.
Yeah. So I also understand that you're a guest chef at the Blue Parrot in Gettysburg. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship?
Yes. Yeah, so another name change. Now it's just called the Parrot, right, because it's under new ownership.
It is.
But actually, there is a woman named Allison McElhenney Giles, and she was in the first class of women to graduate from CIA, mm-hmm, as in the institute that teaches chefs how to do their thing. So you can imagine how talented she must be. But I can remember in the late 80s saying I wanted to learn how to cook like a restaurant chef. And she said, I'll teach you. And I started adding up the dollars and going, well, I wonder how much this is going to cost. But literally, for years and years, she taught me how to cook like a restaurant chef for free. So I do
That's
it
so
for
cool.
I do it for free. I mean, I do get free meals out of it.
Right.
But it's such a blast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know your love for Y River. That's something that we've bonded over the years as a great dry rub. It's from the Eastern Shore of Maryland. So I know that you love your cooking. So absolutely.
Seafood, Jamie. Well, seafood.
Gotta do it. And so one last thing that I understand is one of your hobbies is martial arts.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So from a young age, I've had the pleasure to study a couple of different styles. One is Ishin Ryu, one is Tang Soo Do, which is sort of the father of the American Taekwondo, and then another is Hapkido, which is a little more lethal, but it's one that you have to stick with in order to do. Lately, I've been studying, so for the past 15 years, a style of Kung Fu called Choi Li Foot, which combines all the animal styles into one, and allows you to be true to each art form, but combine them in whichever way you wish. So I've studied martial arts for now 44 years.
So shifting to Gettysburg College,
yes,
itself. So you've worked at the admissions office, as you said, for almost, I guess it's 33 years now.
Yes.
Can you share what first drew you to Gettysburg College?
I will tell you what first drew me here is what keeps me here, and that's the kindness of people, the willingness to disagree in a civil manner, mm-hmm, the willingness to work out challenges without being hateful, which is a stark contrast to today's political society. But it is that people are okay with being a high-quality, highly selective place, but being kind about it. And I think that plays out in two rankings that don't seem to fit together in the Princeton Review. We're in the top 20 of about 4,000 colleges for students who study the most.
Hmm.
We're also in the top 20 for students who like their professors the most. Those don't fit together, but that sort of captures why I love this place. It's tough, it's challenging, it's competitive, but it's kind. And people don't seem to have the typical, I am a 33-year administrator, so Jamie, we can't speak as friends.
Right.
You must kiss the ring.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that I've seen that here in terms of the willingness of people that, I mean, like even President Riggs.
Yes.
You talk to her, it's just like talking to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that community of door holders, I think, is really something unique.
Wonderful.
Here at Gettysburg. Speaking of that highly selective process, mm-hmm, Gettysburg College received 6,200 applications this year.
We did.
And only a small percentage of those students obviously are offered a spot, mm-hmm, in the incoming class. So what process does an application to Gettysburg College go through? You receive the application. What happens from there?
So after it is complete and all of this is done electronically, people actually read the applications and we read every single word, and it's done at random. So in your electronic queue, if you're reading at home on a given day, you're going to try to read 45 to 50 applications and do what it takes to complete it. But you're giving it a preliminary evaluation that tells you its relative academic strength based on a rubric that I cannot reveal to anyone. And also the value of what the student does outside of the classroom. And that value is not just school-related activities. It could be scouting. It could be a job after school. It could be any other thing that makes the student a whole person. And then after the deadline, we actually meet in committee, which is pretty exciting. I mean, we spend 7 days per week together for a month and a half, and we read everything about every single individual. And although it's still painful to turn down such talent, the fact is what we end up with is this really well-blended student body that is balanced and rounded and still has all the great personal qualities that you and I both find admirable.
So how many people would read an application prior to it going through the committee process?
Usually just one, Jamie. So okay. It's one person reads the application and does an evaluation. A committee could be two people, it could be three people, it could be four. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what we do is based on something that is pretty modern in the admissions world, committee-based evaluation. But Gettysburg has really done it for a long time in looking at an application and having two people look at it at right. one time. You get the essence of the student.
Every application goes to committee, or do you weed out some of them in the initial process?
There are a few that get weeded out because they're just not quite as strong. But
right.
honestly, Jamie, the part that's interesting for us, and I'm going to make up a figure that's probably close to accurate, I'd say 90% of our applicant pool is pretty solid enough to be college ready at a really good academic place. So we have a great applicant pool, and this year was so strong, it was yeah. just, it was hard to turn down such great people.
Take us inside the room. As you're trying to make these tough decisions between two really great candidates, what is it that can make the difference? What can make or break an acceptance?
Well, one thing that does it is authenticity. So if you are looking at a student who's a great student, who has taken advantage of what their school has to offer in the way of challenging courses, has done well consistently or has recovered from a setback pretty well, has really been involved in what they've loved. So they're not just filling out a resume. Their activities are commitments. And you can see it by the number of hours per week, the number of weeks per year, and the number of years in high school they've done it. Mm-hmm. They've written a great essay. They've connected with us on a campus visit, an off-campus interview, an information session here. But they have that Gettysburg quality that says, I'm going to be able to hang academically, and I'm going to make a commitment that'll allow me to make a difference outside of the classroom. And I think the last part of that is that you just get this sense that that student will take advantage of the transformative opportunities that Gettysburg offers. You know, we need all of that, because without right. that, you have a great science center, a great center for global education, a great Garth Waite leadership center, a great radio station, and no people to run it. Like that plug there?
Yeah, I did. That was a excellent plug. So when you first sit down to read an application, what's mm-hmm. the first thing you go to? What is your go-to first thing to read? Do you just start at the beginning, or do you start in a specific spot?
I start at the beginning. I look at who they are and where they're from. I look at their family information so that I can see if there are any dynamics I need to be aware of mm-hmm. after that. I look at their activities next to see what their commitments are. I read their essay next to see how they express their thoughts. I look at their recommendations from teachers and counselors and other people after that to see what others think of them. And then when I'm reading, the last thing I read is the transcript. The SAT, the ACT, although we're test optional, so it may not be testing, but I want to have a framework for the human being so that I can say, here is who the human is that's attached to all these great grades.
What would you say, if you were to give one piece of advice of a way that applicants can stand out in the committee process, one thing that they should do in high school to be, you know, that perfect applicant for Gettysburg College, what would you say?
I would say to do what you love beyond the classroom and be your absolute best every single year. It's still about authenticity, though. Some folks try to game the system because of the selectivity, and it's really that we're looking for individuals who are comfortable being themselves and who are ready.
One of the things that you do in your role as a admissions officer, is you conduct admissions interviews with prospective students. And I was one of your interviewees.
I loved it, Jamie.
Four years ago when I was applying to Gettysburg. You have this way of putting people at ease that I think really is a gift. In the interview, we talked about my goals. You said something to me that has stuck with me ever since. You said that although you would love for me to come to Gettysburg College, you wanted me to go to the school at which I felt I had the best fit. And you weren't overtly trying to sell me the institution like other admissions counselors had. You were really interested in me and what was the best choice for me. That's not to say that you didn't try to sell me on Gettysburg at all. You bribed me with servo cookies and milkshakes. but it didn't feel like a sales pitch.
Yeah.
You're the main reason I actually came to Gettysburg College.
Thank you.
Without you, I might have ended up at Dickinson or Franklin and Marshall. I know. So in a world where liberal arts colleges are so much alike, what role do you think the admissions interviews and personal connections with the recruitment counselors plays in the admissions process?
Jamie, that's a fantastic question. And what I tell people, at least for Gettysburg, is that we are good at saying, here is what you have expressed that you're interested in doing. Let me tell you what Gettysburg College does. So instead of it being to overly simplify it, hi, Gettysburg admissions officer, do you have a good biology program? Yes, student. Yes, we do. And then you move on. Instead, right. It is, we use names. We talk about individuals that we know are going to teach you. Mm-hmm. We talk about individuals, I mean, you know that some of my favorite people are in the dining center. So we talk about the people you're going to see. And we share student stories. And again, the idea is not to talk about Gettysburg just programmatically, because Gettysburg College's difference is in the people that we have. So mentioning those individuals allows us to say, Jamie, with confidence, I know Gettysburg is great for you, but I want you to understand if it's great for you. And if it is, this is going to be great. And if it isn't, again, choose the place that is best for you. So for me, our job is to be information exchange agents. I just made that up. But we're exchanging information with you as students and also connecting you to the rest of the campus.
How can applicants use an interview to really stand out in the admissions process?
People can tell us their real story. If you're a babysitter, and you don't have much in the way of flashy-looking activities, tell us why you are that person who's so trusted by so many parents. Tell us why it is that younger children connect with you. That is a great quality that you get to tell us about. Or if it's that you want to tell us how interested you are in us. We believe you if you're being authentic, so that's easy. Or if you want some information that is not available on a catalog, even though we do those electronically here, or in a website, the real action of Gettysburg College, you can ask us because we see it every day. And our vested interest is we admitted you. Now we want to see what you're doing. And we keep track of what you're doing, as you know, because we're visible and we love seeing what happens with that set of documents that belongs to a real person when you're here and thriving.
Shifting a little bit to recruiting a more diverse class.
Mm-hmm.
You've been committed for years to increasing the diversity of the student body at Gettysburg College.
And absolutely.
How do you go about building and recruiting a diverse incoming class?
So part of what we do is we first look for talent and we go by the assumption that is legitimate that race or class or being someone whose parents didn't go to college, regardless of ethnicity, doesn't control your talent. What has been a commonality is that you can find talent in every corner, but you have to go find it. I think the thing that makes us different is that, to be blunt, if I totally could, you know,
absolutely,
I'm going to anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to stop you.
Well, yeah, exactly, Jamie. So in a lot of places, if it's just about ethnic diversity, then you hire the person who represents that ethnicity to do that work. That's the case at many other places. I call it apartheid recruiting. At Gettysburg, any one of us will spend time in an inner city with talented youngsters who belong to a community-based organization. We'll find pockets of people who are on scholarship at a boarding school in New England or in the Midwest. We find the talent, and because Gettysburg College is a place that is trusted to make that talent develop on the collegiate level, it just happens to work. Is it a challenge? Absolutely, because everybody wants the same students, but we know where to find talent based on our relationship building, and then we go after it.
Talking about going after it, I know you have a home in Chicago in addition to here at Gettysburg. Can you talk a little bit about the work you do for the college in Chicago?
Sure. So I do a combination of things. I'll visit the typical suburban, high-powered public and private schools because those are great places with great resources. But I'll also spend time in the many schools that are part of, as an example, the Noble Street Charter Network, which is a network that is very well financed so that these inner city kids are given access to the same advanced placement or international baccalaureate courses as their suburban counterparts. They are given the opportunity to spend time on campuses that are financed by some pretty well-placed friends of the network. But these are students who need to understand what the terms are that you and I might throw around all the time, the alphabet soup that we use in this profession. My advantage is that I just go and explain it, and I'm very real with them. And then I say, here is what makes a quality match for you. Here's what makes a quality transition. So through that work and through the good graces of Gail Sweezy, my director, Barbara Fritz, my vice president, I've been able to turn Illinois from an outlying state to one in which, by numbers of applications, is now competing favorably with two big feeder states, and that is Connecticut and Maryland. So we are just a few applications behind those states, but it's because I'm given the time to cultivate relationships, be helpful, do off-campus interviews out there, take Gettysburg College to the students, and then help to articulate what Gettysburg College could mean for them.
So obviously you've seen success in the things that you're trying to do, but have you encountered any major roadblocks or speed bumps along the way?
Here are some major roadblocks. One is distance, because people don't look at the idea of a 90-minute flight on Southwest Airlines as being what it is. They say, oh my gosh, that's 700 miles. How do we handle that? Or it might be that with some, because of responsibilities at home, they're less likely to go to college more than an hour away from where they live. Or in the case of a couple of institutions out there in Missouri and in Wisconsin, students are offered in-state tuition without having to live in those particular states. Sticker shock is a big one. Without even looking at financial aid, people will say, forget it, you cost too much. And that's before I even get to talk about how great our financial aid process is.
Right. So that's actually the next topic. So it's a great segue.
Jamie, we're still connected.
Look at
man.
That, connected. The comprehensive fee, it's also the sticker price for the college, is another way of thinking about it, including tuition fees, room and board, has increased to $67,490 for next year.
It has.
So as the comprehensive fee continues to increase year after year, how can the college continue to recruit and enroll students from diverse socioeconomic backgrounds that may not be able to afford a Gettysburg education and may not be aware of financial aid?
Here is a plug to all of you listening out there. We have one of the most enthusiastic alumni bases out there, and I'm speaking as a Penn State grad. You know, those people are rabid, but Gettysburg College folks are dedicated to this place. So by having a big financial aid budget that helps to defray that cost, would we like it to be bigger? Absolutely. But we can say to someone who needs every single penny of that cost, apply. Apply correctly. Apply on time. And if you're admitted, we can make Gettysburg College affordable for you.
66% of students at Gettysburg College do receive some form of merit or need-based aid.
Yeah.
So many students don't pay full price. Mm-hmm. But with a fee that high, as we said, people might get the impression that Gettysburg College is only for people of means, and they may not choose to apply. So I know you talked about the message you need to get out. So how are you working to get that message out that there's aid available and that they should apply?
I borrow people from other institutions, so I have some very good professional associates at similar schools and some that are not at similar schools who will co-present with me to charter school networks, to groups of guidance counselors who serve the students who attend them, to community-based organizations that serve talented students. And we say, look, these places that have higher price tags also have larger financial aid budgets. And we are the places that are making college affordable. So even though maybe 3% of the United States graduates have a liberal arts college degree, we tell people of, again, the transformative opportunities that exist here and the fact that they have a price tag. And you don't have to pay that price if you don't have it in your pocket. It's a very different concept because if they're buying a house, they're buying a car, they're doing something else, you're borrowing everything and paying everything back and then some. It's a weird concept to get such a valuable commodity and actually not have to borrow the majority of it.
Yeah, definitely. I received significant grant aid here, and it's such a blessing to not have so much debt to have to repay, especially since I'm moving on to law school now.
Does that mean you already found out?
It means that I do have one acceptance, and it's a very large scholarship. So
congratulations! I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you very much.
My own nephew or something.
Well, thank you, Daryl. So getting back to recruiting a more diverse class.
Yes.
Obviously, the political landscape right now is, I'm sure, having an effect. Do you think that the Trump administration has had a negative effect on the number of minority applicants that want to apply to Gettysburg College? Or?
It hasn't to us, but it's because no political office, because those change every 4 or 8 years, is going to affect the history of a place that is doing a lot to get it right. So it hasn't affected us, but it's because Gettysburg College's consistency is still in the kindness of the people. And this is regardless of political stripe. People are still kind and respectful for the most part here. So our numbers keep looking great, and we hope they continue to look great on May 1st.
Where do you feel that the college stands in terms of representation within our student body of traditionally underrepresented minorities?
I say we have a long way to go. Here is a fact. In the nation, the kindergarten through 12th grade public population, I guess I'll call it, is now less than half Caucasian. So if you assume that those same students are going to become collegians, and then later lawyers, doctors, business people, teachers, clients of stockbrokers, it's incumbent upon every college, not just Gettysburg College, to get it right and enhance that representation. Three industries that did it well, and I'm going to give a plug for a TED Talk that I gave here on campus a number of years ago, McDonald's, Apple Computing, and Nike were among the first companies to understand that everybody might want fast food. And I'm not judging about whether or not people eat it. Everybody wears footwear.
Right.
And everybody wants, at that time it was new, but the iPad, the MacBook Air, and this is not product placement, but when those places started to reach out to the world of cultures, they dominated their sectors. They'll never be toppled. So it's not that Gettysburg is looking to make a financial windfall, but if we're going to be real about it, we need to get closer to what exists in the nation.
What new strategies do you think Gettysburg College should use in the years to come to recruit a more diverse student body?
We should use students and alums who are from more traditional backgrounds, and whatever that means. I mean, I don't call it predominantly Caucasian. I just call it historically, that's what all of these places were. Mm-hmm. But when those individuals realize the importance of having a place that represents the world, that's when we make the change. So it is costly because financial aid continues to be an important priority. It is something that means that we're going to continue to have to outpace the competition. So as an example, we are just cementing a new partnership with a place called the Academy Group in Chicago that is financed by the CEO of Guggenheim Investments and Irvin Magic Johnson and some other people. So Gettysburg College will be their first partner. That's going to get our names onto the lips of a lot of people in some pretty high-powered places, but it's about finding new ways to outpace the competition. We've had partnerships with places like Philadelphia Futures, for which we were the first partner, the College Bound Initiative run by the Tisch family in New York, for which we were the first partner. So we just need to keep being first and reminding people that we were the ones who cared the most first in a place that is going to be safe psychologically and kind. Is it perfect? No. But would I put my nephew or niece on this campus? Absolutely.
Shifting back to sort of your more personal side of things, what's your favorite part of the job here at Gettysburg College?
It is when I am on campus and I'm just crossing campus on, let's say, around lunch or around 4 or 5 o'clock, and not to be cheesy, but running into people like you and other students that I've met through this process when they were high schoolers, it is, I think, a rare feeling to love every minute of what you do every day. So I feel lucky. It's a blessing. But to see the results, so when you became the person who was doing the whole attic thing as a sophomore, is that right?
As a first year.
As a first year. See, I even forgot. But that is why I do what I do, because I actually get to see, I mean, it's not potential actualized, it's potential exceeded. There's no better feeling in the world than to know you had a part in somebody's success. Would not trade it for any amount of money or anything in the world. Absolutely love that.
What's the one thing that you're most proud of from your tenure here at Gettysburg College?
It is probably just being a first partner in the couple of organizations that I mentioned, because Gettysburg College changed the landscape when it came to partnering with community-based organizations. It's also working collaboratively with our Office of Multicultural Engagement, now what was Intercultural Advancement, in a new way that had both sides working on recruitment and retention. But for me, it's still seeing what students do and knowing that if I interviewed someone and they chose to come, I am over the moon every time somebody says, "You're the reason." I just say there is no higher compliment, because it makes me know that being kind, being a listener, being thoughtful, and being truthful and ethical is all worthwhile in an industry that it's tough out there and it's competitive. But being an ethical place, again, I sleep well at night because I know that everything I've done with every family has been on the up and up. Again, not anything I would ever trade.
Looking forward, what's one thing you hope to achieve in the next few years? One major thing, goal that you have?
I want for this place to continue to be the leader in how to think about how to diversify. And not by doing it through recruitment, but by doing it through graduation. So I want Gettysburg College's four-year graduation rate to rise above 90%. And I know there are lots of cogs in that whole system to make that work. I want it to be that we continue to be a place that, believe it or not, when you look at our underrepresented population, so whether they are first generation students, students of color, that sort of thing, those graduation rates are always comparable to and usually exceed our overall four-year graduation rate. I want us to still be that place that leads. I want us to still be the place that says it's okay to be caring and also tough academically. I mean, it's a lot of us being more and more comfortable with our identity and having our alums continue to have the pride they have, which is what gives us a strong applicant pool, which is what gives us choice, which allows us to have the people we love to have here on campus. That sounded cheesy, but that's what I feel.
Well, Daryl Jones, Senior Associate Director of Admissions at Gettysburg, thank you so much for joining us.
Jamie, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
This has been an excerpt from the Gettysburgian and WZBT's podcast, On Target. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or catch new episodes of On Target every weekend at gettysburgian.com/podcast.